the Nightcap.
Listen, never turn. If you do that, they'll call you Myrtle. Let's go. Let's go. He could dangle. He could score. Who else? Bobby Orr. Let's go. Let's go. Who's the best? I often ponder. Right now, it's Stevie Wonder. Let's go. Let's go. Ooh, what a pup. Oh, how she loves the Stanley Cup. Hockey man is what I am. Let's go! Listen, listen to what I say. Play that game the Canadian way. Hockey man is what I am. Let's go!
It's the Nightcap on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Please start talking. I need to fade this down.
Turn it up. They should be playing this in the clubs. Oh, and see how quickly. Like, I say two words and it's gone.
Oh, man.
That happened. I still, every time I hear it, it's just unbelievable. he did a rap video. It's the Nightcap, Joe DiBiase and Kyle Powell here on WGR. We talked a lot about Antonio Brown in the first hour. If you still want to get your thoughts in on that, you can at 803-0550. And we got a song draft. The 25th of January. I've never been in a draft here. I've listened to a lot of them, if not all of them. I don't know. What do you think my strategy should be here? Because, like I said, I'm going to probably know more about today's music. And if I want to do anything like that, like, I don't know, like something rap. Like, I'm into Drake. So like, I could save that for my last pick. Depending on who else is in it. Maybe
right,
I'll have to
how
be
big?
Wary of that.
Do we have an idea of the pool yet?
Four or five, we don't know yet. And I'm going to have to be wary, but I think there's a good chance that I might be the only person that would pick something like that. So I'd have to save that for the end. Like if I were going to pick a Drake song, I would wait until the end to do that. Cause there's stuff that I could see like Bulldog and Mike being interested in that I'd have to take early. First overall pick should be what?
Oh boy.
Like, is there one favorite? Brian Mazurowski tweeted this earlier from WBEN on this, that he doesn't think there is a song out there that should be over 50% to be drafted. I think there is a song that will absolutely get drafted, even if like no matter who would be in the draft. I don't even know if I want to give it away. Anyone could be listening right now.
Just tell me off the record. We'll turn
no,
the
no,
mics
no, I'll
off.
Say it. I don't care. Because I don't think I would take this first. Maybe I would. I don't know. But I think Africa by Toto is over 50% to get picked. Right? Like, that's just kind of it's a strange song. It's strange thing that song is. That it's an 80s song that I guess I don't know too well how much, like, the older or, like, the generation above mine likes that song. But for some reason, like, millennials have, championed it. Like, find me a millennial that does not like Africa by Toto. You won't.
I'm just wondering why it resurfaced the way it did.
I don't know. It's like a, I don't know, like not like a cult hit, but something like along those lines.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. For some reason, like it just took off. Also, my strategy might have to stop from going too heavily on this, but I feel like I'm going to end up picking a lot of songs that, you know, like if you're at a bar and the song comes on, those are the songs that everybody's singing, like those ones. Like that's gonna be some value. Like you gotta do. I'm gonna have to do some scouting. There's the Disney songs. We talked about this off air a little bit earlier. Like what would be the top Disney song picked? And I think the favorite would be "Circle of Life" from Lion King, but it's gonna depend on preference. Forgot about Tarzan had such good, had Phil Collins.
Masterpiece.
Mm. Ooh, I'm going to have to maybe dip my
revisit
toes into
that soundtrack
that.
For sure.
I'm going to have to. I'm going to listen to a lot of music over the next couple weeks. I'm kind of excited. I'm going to make a board. I'm going to listen to a lot of music. Different categories. Disney's going to be like the European skaters. And like classics. It's gonna be like the North American skaters, like all that. I'm excited. So there's that. Sabres at Hurricanes tomorrow. I did want to talk a little bit of Sabres before we get on to Mark Schofield in about 15 minutes. Sabres at the Hurricanes tomorrow. Actually, before I go all in on Sabres, one person did text in the shout song. And that did not come up today at all, off the air, on the air. And the shout song for the song draft, that's the way to win the draft. If I can get that late, kind of fly under the radar and pick the shout song, everyone's going to vote for me to win it. I think. Have to. Is it a good song, though, on its own? I don't know. Like, there's the only time I think I've ever heard the actual song is in Wedding Crashers. It's in, like, one of the first scenes. The shout song.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Does the shout song get picked?
Around here, yeah.
You think so?
I think so.
I think I might do it. I don't know if I...
Which variation?
I can just listen to the shout song. Like, it's context.
You think Mike wants to listen to Happy Birthday for the rest of his life every day? But,
maybe.
Hey, man.
I don't know.
The transcending song.
Yeah. All right, that's a good one. Thank you, Texter, for texting that in. But like I said, Sabres at Hurricanes tomorrow at 7:30. Different line combinations. We talked a lot about line combinations yesterday, and I'm glad that they're doing that, that they're putting Tage Thompson on that top line. He doesn't get talked about a lot, and it's interesting that he doesn't, because his place in this organization and on this team is an interesting one, and I'm not sure if anybody else really shares it. He is kind of that middle-level prospect that we haven't really seen come around here. We've really either had top first-round picks like Jack Eichel and Sam Reinhart, or even Ristolainen to an extent, where you know like they're going to make the team. They'll get here. They're going to be really good someday. It wasn't really much of a question. Like, how good was always a question, but not necessarily like them making the league and then being good. Or you've had second-round picks like Justin Bailey, and then third-round picks like Nick Baptiste, and other second-round picks who didn't even come close to the NHL. And those guys kind of didn't become much of anything. Justin Bailey's still in Rochester, but he hasn't shown anything in the NHL that makes you think he'll be a regular. And Thompson's kind of in the middle of that. Thompson is late first-round pick, great physical ability, 6'6", can skate, can carry the puck. His shot is amazing. But just for some reason, like, it seems like it's hard for him to put it all together. Even this year, you see the highlights. That slap shot against Detroit was one of the hardest shots I've ever seen in my life. It was beautiful. He's got hands. I mean, he's toe-dragging guys out there like in neutral ice just to make little plays. Like, it's not even – he's not even just doing it to score goals. Like, he's making, like, toe-drag moves and these dekes to, like, open up space for himself. But he's still having a problem putting it all together. I mean, he's only got 9 points on the season. That's nothing, almost. So, I love the idea of putting him with Jack Eichel and Jeff Skinner. I love it. There's a bit of a question on whether that worked. When we had Paul Hamilton on the show earlier today, he did mention something that I didn't think about, that Thompson does like to carry the puck, and Eichel is a guy that should be carrying the puck, and Skinner is a guy that can carry the puck. So you've got three guys in the same line that I think can all do that. The difference is maybe Thompson can kind of slide back into a different kind of role. Maybe he's been having to carry the puck because of who his line mates have been. When you play with Zemgus Girgensons and Johan Larson, or when you play with Connor Sherry, like, you're going to have to carry the puck a lot. And if you're playing with Jack Eichel and Jeff Skinner, maybe you don't have to do that as much. He can kind of settle in. He can just be like the guy, I'm just going to go to the scoring areas. I got a great shot, and I'm going to just focus on that. That's what I would kind of hope to get out of this. Have him be that big gun to go along with two other guys that you know can shoot the puck. Like, if he turned into a Leshko Tolik right now, would we not be happy with that? That's a limited player. That's not a superstar player. That's not an all-star level player. But what was Leshko Tolik once upon a time for the Sabres? He was not a two-way player. He was a one-way offensive player who had good hands. You saw Tolik with it in the shootout. And my God, what a shot. Like, they kind of read like the same type of player to me. And if he became Kotalik, sure. I just looked up his stats a couple minutes ago to make this comparison. And, like, I take it. 20 goals four times. 60 points once. 40 points a couple other times. Like I said, it's not big production. But if I got... I don't know. Are we supposed to think more of Tage Thompson right now? Are we supposed to want more than four 20-goal seasons in his career? Maybe we are. That's tough to do nowadays. I think it's absolutely possible he's better than that, for sure. But I also think with him, and like this is why I said that I think his place in the organization is a little bit unique, is it's possible that he's better than that. It's also possible that he's not as good as that. It's possible he doesn't become that for you. Even Kotalik, which was like a low-end top six forward. It's possible Tage Thompson does not become that. We thought we were going to get that out of Marcus Foligno way back when. Like, that's kind of how far back I think you have to go to find an example like this. Like, a guy, a prospect who showed up, had great physical ability. You're like, oh, wow, this guy could be really good. And just kind of, you know, he went from, like, really good prospect to, I don't know. I don't know what I'm getting here. Third liner, fourth liner? And that's kind of what happened to Foligno. If you look back on his career, it went from, yeah, he was a mid-round pick. But all of a sudden, oh my God, look at him and this guy in the World Juniors that the Sabres got. Marcus Foligno, playing for Team Canada. He's lighting it up. And then he shows up in the NHL and he's playing phenomenal on a line with Tyler Ennis and Drew Stafford. And all of a sudden, the Sabres like, oh, we could trade Zach Kassian because we got Marcus Foligno. And then, fast forward a couple years, he's a 12, 13-minute guy who's going to score 10 to 15 goals if you're lucky, and if he's playing on your top six, then you're probably in trouble. So what does Thompson become? Does he become better than that? I think that's your hope at this point. But, like I said, this isn't Eichel, this isn't Reinhardt, this isn't even Ristolainen. He's a big question mark, and he's a big part of that Ryan O'Reilly trade, which they are still paying for on the ice. Couple shows in a row I've mentioned the stat. Or no, not even a couple shows in a row. I only mentioned it yesterday. But the stat that I looked up on the centerman on this team is alarming. They have not replaced Ryan O'Reilly's on-ice production. Jack Eichel this year, 40 games played, 15 goals, 34 assists for 49 points. The rest of the centers on the team, which is Rodriguez, Larson, Sobotka, and Middlestat, 157 games played, 15 goals, 23 assists for 38 points. That needs to be fixed. And you made that hole by trading O'Reilly. You knew what you were doing there. Maybe you had to do it, but you knew you were going to open up a gap there at center. And if Thompson doesn't become great, then I think you're praying that that first-round pick for the Blues becomes something special. Otherwise, you lost that trade, looking back. Because you took on Sobotka for St. Louis. You took on Berglund for St. Louis. So they can get rid of those caps. The two pieces the Sabres got that they really, really wanted was Tage Thompson, former first-round pick with a lot of physical ability, and a first-round pick. So they're in an interesting spot right now. I'm excited by him. But there should be at least a little pressure for him to succeed. Because that was the main piece of that trade. That is the biggest trade and the biggest decision that Jason Botterill has made as his time as general manager. Really. Like, Thompson kind of flies under the radar, and it's interesting that he does. Because he is the main piece to me in the biggest decision that Jason Botterill has made. Very interesting move that they did that. And they didn't have to, I still don't think. But they felt like they were able to do it because of Middlestat, and they felt like they were able to do it because of the other depth and getting Thompson. And now here he is. I like the fact that he's being, like, they're utilizing him. I like the fact that he never went to Rochester. I like the fact that he's now being used on the power play a lot. I don't necessarily love that he's replaced Middlestat in that role, but I do like that they're getting him in there. And we see the hands. I mean, he's won them a game in a shootout to keep that win streak going. So he is helping them, I think, at times. I just want to see more consistency, and I'm really hoping, and I am intrigued to see if putting him on a top line, which really has not happened yet this year, will help get that consistency out of Tage Thompson. I think he's a big piece of this team going forward that has kind of flown under the radar. And one more thing on him. Since he is that big and his shot is that good and his hands are that good, there is always a potential that they hit a home run with him. And if that happens and he becomes like an all-star level player, like if he starts potting 30 goals for them a year, that's a huge, huge if, a big ask. And most likely that's not going to happen. But if it does, man, they are going to be in a great spot. They are absolutely going to be up there with Tampa and Toronto if they get that. Along with signing Skinner and Mittelstadt. Like, there's just so much to look forward to on this team. That's why I love the spot they're in. This is not Columbus, who's been talked about on the station earlier today. Columbus is like, this is it for them. Panarin and Bobrovsky, it seems like they're leaving after the season. They, to me, might have to go all in right now, or else they might never get a shot at a Stanley Cup for a long time. Like, their door is closing. Similar to a lot of teams in the East right now. Like Pittsburgh, the door is still open, but it's creaking closed. Washington, they won the cup last year. Their door is still open, but Ovechkin's in his 30s. Backstrom's in his 30s. John Carlson, I think, if he's not 30, he will be. Holtby is getting up there. Like, their guys are in the middle to the later part of their primes. Door starting to creak a little closed. And the Thompson, Mittelstadt, Skinner, Eichel, Reinhardt, the best part about this Sabre season is, like, this is year one of this. We could have 10 of them. You'd hope to have 10 of them. But you realistically could have 10 of them because of all the young talent you've got. And Thompson, just basically overall here, I think Thompson should be more consistently identified as a part of that. 803-0550 is the phone number. We'll switch to football a little bit in the next segment as we'll hear from Mark Schofield from Inside the Pylon and Pro Football Weekly and Inside the Patriots podcast. That's next here on the Nightcap on WGR.
I think his athleticism was better than I thought it was going to be in terms of how it translated to the National Football League. And we saw that in terms of them using him as a runner and him being able to use his athleticism to either extend plays or pick up yardage with his legs if plays break down in the secondary. So I think there's that aspect to it as well.
Mark Schofield, we're going to hear more from him in just a second. Quick score update around the NHL. Bruins and Capitals tied at 1. The Bruins are out shooting them like 40-13, I read. The highlight of that game, if you haven't seen it run around social media, Alex Ovechkin checked Zdeno Chara into the bench, like flipped him into the bench. And it's pretty funny. Go find that if you haven't seen it. Washington actually just scored, so it's 2-1 Capitals over the Bruins. Sabres are 2 points back of Boston. Toronto up 3-0 still on the Devils. Islanders up 3-2 on the Rangers. The Islanders are 2 games back of the Sabres. And Columbus up 1-0 on Nashville. So that's not good. Second period. Oh, one more. Montreal. I forgot. They're in action against St. Louis. And St. Louis is winning. Nice. 1-0 halfway through the first period. So good news. Some good news on the out-of-town scoreboard for the Sabres. Let's get back to football. Mark Schofield. A lot of good. It's a little dense, but good stuff with him. Smart stuff on the Bills, Josh Allen, and also the NFL playoffs. So here is Mark Schofield from Inside the Pylon with Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Mark Schofield is with us. Let's talk some football. Mark, I like your style here. Your name is Mark Schofield, and your Twitter handle is @MarkSchofield. That's the way to do it.
Mike, I try to keep it simple. I don't want to have this long handle where people can't remember. It's simple. It's my name. It gets it done. It gets you in and out.
All you need. So Actually, a piece you wrote about Josh Allen back in October, Matt Waldman might have retweeted it, or I think Matt did. And we saw that. Like, let's talk to Mark about Josh Allen. So that was, you had an example of a play from the Bills game in Green Bay early in the season. Like, this is how he gets into trouble. That's a long time ago now, and he had a lot of highlights after that. How do you think it went overall?
Well, let me preface this by saying that, remember, those of the listeners at WGR that remember some of my thoughts on him pre-draft, I wasn't that high on him. But I will say that he has exceeded my expectations. I think he's ahead of where I thought he was going to be as a quarterback. And a couple of things come into play here. One, I think, you know, Brian Daboll did a pretty good job in sort of doing some things with him schematically that played to his strengths as a quarterback. And one of those, of course, is his arm strength. It is as advertised. It has got him into and off, also out of some bad situations as a quarterback. And so I think there's that aspect to him. And I think his athleticism was better than I thought it was going to be in terms of how it translated to the National Football League. And we saw that in terms of them using him as a runner and him being able to use his athleticism to either extend plays or pick up yardage with his legs if plays break down in the secondary. So I think there's that aspect to it as well. But one of the things that has really stood out to me watching him over the course of the season is how when he was at Wyoming, there were times when he would try to play sort of hero ball. He would rely on that arm too much. He would roll out to his right. That would be his ultimate plan B, and then try to make some sort of crazy throw downfield. And while he did that at times, included in that Packers game that I was writing about back in October, where he did throw an interception in the red zone, there were some other times when, for example, a play against the Vikings when they tried to dial up a vertical route concept, it wasn't there, so we checked it down. And there were other times throughout the season when he did things like that. And that shows you that he's starting to learn that, okay, you can get away with some things in college that you aren't going to get away with against an NFL defense. And so you put that together, I think the developmental path is there. I'm excited about where he is as a quarterback right now, and I think Bills fans have all the right in the world to be excited about where he could be in year two and beyond.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like just an obvious thing to say, because a lot of people were predicting maybe it would happen, that it would be some kind of a blessing that he got hurt and had to watch. You know, the injury, obviously, you never want an injury, but him getting to play and then come out, not because he got pulled, but because an injury forced him out, and then watching a few games and, you know, gleaning something from that, like, you know, watching and perhaps recognizing I've got a little more time than I thought I did, or I don't have as much time as I thought I did. Like, whatever it is you can take away from just, you know, watching from the sideline and not being the one that's, you know, in the line of fire.
Yeah, it's a great point. And that actually happened with two rookie quarterbacks this year, because you saw both with Allen and with Sam Darnold. Darnold went down with that foot injury, and he comes back and plays pretty well, you know, when he comes back from that injury as well. Similar with Allen, he has the injury, he goes out, he comes back. You learn some things from watching. You know, football, particularly the quarterback position, it's an interesting position in that you can learn some things and absorb on the sideline sort of watching. Ultimately, you have to go out there and do it yourself. You have to go through the reads when guys are trying to hit you. You have to try to make throws when you're on the move or facing the blitz and things like that. But when you get a chance, like both of those rookies did, to sort of sit down for a couple of weeks, observe, go through the mental progressions on the sidelines while you're not getting chased, while you're not getting hit, you can, like you said, you can learn that, oh, against that coverage scheme, I have more time. Against that blitz, that's my heart rate, and I got to get it there, because there were times when Allen missed things like that. So I do think, like you said, it was a blessing in disguise, and gets a chance to sort of catch his breath a bit, realize some of the things that he was making mistakes on, and then go back out there and sort of improve upon the foundation he had in, during those early games.
You know, Mark, we were talking about him yesterday, and at one point I said kind of matter-of-factly that I don't think you should expect them to turn him into a really efficient completion percentage type quarterback. And in fact, at one point I even said, like, if he gets to 60, which would be what, like
31st
in the league, like I think I would take that, because I just don't think that that's in the cards for him. Is that harsh? Is that accurate, somewhere in between?
No, I think there's some merit to that argument, because I think if you try to turn him to some sort of high efficiency, you know, short passes, high percentage throws type of quarterback, you're kind of putting sort of, you know, training wheels on a quarterback that doesn't need him in that sense. Because, look, he's got the arm to push the ball downfield. He's got the ability to stress a defense at all levels of the field, from sideline to sideline, line of scrimmage and deep. If you're going to try to build an offense around a goal of, say, 70, 75% completion percentage or something like that, you're taking what he does away from him, what he does best away from him. I think certainly you want to have some things in the playbook that are some defined reads, some easier throws. If you've got a third and four situation outside that just opposition 20-yard line or so, you don't want to let, you know, push something downfield. You want to get something that moves the chains and keeps the drive alive. But at the same time, you've got to stress defenses deep. You don't want a situation where the defense can just play one safety deep. They can put 10 down in the box, and then they constrict those throwing lanes because they know that's what all you're going to do. When you have a quarterback with Allen's skill set, the ability to put the ball downfield with pretty good placement on some of these vertical throws, you have to have those types of plays in the playbook to keep the defense honest, to sort of soften up the front as well, to give you both run game stuff and stuff underneath. So I think, you know, trying to set some sort of goal in terms of completion percentage, I'm not so sure he'd go that route. I think if he pushes the ball downfield and he doesn't hit on a couple of those, it still serves the purpose of softening up that defensive front, making them play honest and defend the entire field.
Mark Schofield with us. Mike Schoep in the Bulldog WGR. You can read Mark in lots of places. Matt's site that we mentioned, pre-snap reads, also insidethepylon.com. So I really don't even know how to, like, put this question to you. Like, what's happening in the league right now is so interesting, just broadly. I mean, you have the Kingsbury hire, all the rookie quarterbacks played or played a lot, and what happened with Lamar Jackson is interesting. Like, when you sit back and take in the league right now and you see these hires and what's going on and teams that really, what Green Bay did, you know, Mark, like trying to get their quarterback to a higher place and in turn the team, what do you make of it? Like, what is a couple of general thoughts about what's happening in the NFL?
Yeah, I think sort of a couple of things we can talk about here. I mean, when you look at the rookie quarterbacks, how all five of the guys that were drafted in the first round played, I think it's sort of the league writ large just coming to the conclusion that, look, there's almost no bigger competitive advantage you can have in a league right now, the way the NFL is structured, than a rookie quarterback playing on his rookie deal. Mm-hmm. Because they come in basically relatively cheap. You can use resources in terms of salary cap space and things like that. Maybe even through trades, you can use those resources to go out and acquire talent and build around these guys. Look at the Rams last year and this year, too, and how they've built around Goff. Look at the Bears and how they've built around Trubisky. They go out and they get a Khalil Mack. And when you look at this year's 12 playoff teams, seven of them, and that includes Carson Wentz, who obviously is injured, seven of them have quarterbacks on rookie deals. And an eighth, the Seattle Seahawks, won a Super Bowl when Wilson was on his. And so I think there's this mindset that if you have a rookie quarterback on his rookie deal, you do everything you can to maximize his development. And part of that is getting an offensive-minded sort of head coach, you know, whether it's, you know, Matt Nagy going to Chicago, whether it's now Kingsbury going to Arizona to work with Josh Rosen. There's a thought that you might get Matt Rhule, kind of an offensive-minded guy, to the Jets to help with Sam Darnold's development. So there's that aspect to it. And the bigger, you know, picture is this is an offensive league now. You know, this is a league that has, whether it's the rules or whatever you want to point to, it's built around offensive football and the passing game. And so if you've got a veteran quarterback, say in the case of, you know, Aaron Rodgers, you've got to maximize what you can get out of him. And going out and getting a guy like Matt LaFleur, obviously sort of a Sean McVay disciple. You look at that Titans offense last year, there was some sort of McVay-type concepts, whether it's air raid stuff, but there was also a vertical element to it as well, which probably makes a guy like Aaron Rodgers happy. It's going to make those receivers happy. You might see them going downfield more instead of that slant, flat stuff that Mike McCarthy was running. And so all of the movement just points to a couple of different things. It's rookie quarterbacks on their rookie deals can give you a competitive advantage, and it's just an offensive-minded passing league right now.
Is it too soon to think about what the reaction is going to be? Like, is there going to be a swing back? You know, like, does defense have a way to correct and catch up? And, like I'm wondering, like, the last place you want to be is hiring the wrong offensive guy or hiring an offensive guy at the wrong time. Like, you're too late. Like, the Rams and the Eagles got in, the door closed, and now everybody wants to get in, and they're just trying to get reasonable facsimiles of Sean McVay and Doug Peterson and whoever, and like, oh, we missed it. And, like, defense is coming, nipping at their heels.
Yeah, I mean, I do think you know, football tends to be sort of that, like, ebb and flow type of game. Things come in cycles. I mean, you know, there was an offensive revolution sort of years ago when teams started using more three wide receiver sets, and then the next thing you saw was the Tampa 2 defense be created by Tony Dungy and company, where you drop that linebacker and you take away that third receiver over the middle of the field, and then, you know, things go in cycles. And so I do think that there will be as sort of evolving on the defensive side of the ball where, for example, you saw this week the San Diego Chargers, Los Angeles Chargers, they use that seven defensive back package against the Baltimore Ravens, A, to stop the run, but B, you've got now got athletes all over the field. You might see more teams do things like that. And so I think defenses will start to catch up. And the other aspect of that is, as these offensive-minded head coaches start to be a little watered down, like you said, facsimiles of McVay and facsimiles of, you know, Doug Peterson, I think that's a great way to describe it, you might see some of these guys start to peter out. But then teams might start thinking, look, you know, you're getting all these, like, Big 12-type coaches to coach in the NFL, these offensive-minded guys from the Big 12. What about some defensive-minded guys from that conference and other conferences that have gone up against these offenses and know how to, if you can't get a stop, at least hold them to field goals and not touchdowns? You might see some of these guys start to work their way into the National Football League to sort of spin that cycle back around.
Mark, one more thing. You're involved with Locked On Patriots, Patriots and Chargers here. I'm just glad Houston lost as a fan because I would have just not even bothered with that game. Who knows, but wouldn't have. And, like, this is good, even if it had been Baltimore. I really like this to see what happens with New England. We saw the Bills play up there in December, and the Patriots, like, they really couldn't throw passes that well.
Right.
What do you expect?
You know, looking at this game on paper, I think this has sort of the blue. If there is a blueprint on how to beat the New England Patriots that, you know, people point to, it's what? It's getting pressure with four. You look at the two Super Bowl losses, they were able to do that. The Giants were getting after Brady with four, dropping seven in the coverage. And then you sit back and you look at this Chargers defense this year. They had 39 sacks in the regular season. One was, you know, taken back due to penalties, so technically 38. But start with that 39 number. Of those, they got 27 sacks when they rushed just four. They got 11 when they rushed five. There was only one play, guys, one sack where they rushed more than five guys, and that was actually a goal line play, a third and goal from the one, and so they just had six guys on the line of scrimmage that kind of bought into a play-action type fake. So you can even throw that one out the window and say they never had to rush more than five to get pressure. They can get after Brady with four, and what that allows them to do is drop seven into coverage. The one silver lining for Patriots fans is they play a ton of zone coverage. 58% of their snaps were on zone coverage this year, second most in the league. We know what Tom Brady can do against zone coverage. So that gives the Patriots fans a glimmer of hope that, you know, as long as they get those four blocked up, Brady can do some things against that secondary. Of course, when you've got Melvin Ingram, you've got Joey Bosa, you've got Nwosu, they can move these guys around and get pressure. I think this defensive front is going to give Brady some trouble. I think this is a one-score type game. I think the Patriots win, but I think it's like a 23-20 type of game, guys.
Mike mentioned that when the Bills were in there, like, Brady had trouble throwing, and we saw that periodically through the year. I'm wondering what kind of form you think he's in, like, even just health-wise. Like, do you think he can put it in a tight window right now?
I mean, I think if you would ask me that question the week after that Bills game, that week 16 game, I would have said that he's dealing with some sort of knee injury, which there are rumors around. You know, Mike Giardi and others have sort of said that he's got some sort of knee-type injury with that left knee, and there were some times in that game against the Bills where you saw him sort of guard that left knee. There was a play where Kyle Williams looped around the edge on a stunt against left tackle Trent Brown, and Brady sort of pulled away from it like he wanted to protect that left knee. Now, he did get hurt that way, but still, you see that, you start to wonder. But then he had the game against the Jets. He seemed to be better in that game against, you know, their pressure looks at times. He moved around better in the pocket that game. He had a throw where he got flushed to his left and then rolled right, found Philip Dorsett for a touchdown. He seemed to move better. So I think maybe he was a little bit dinged up for that Buffalo game. Maybe he's recuperating. Obviously, the bye week will help him a bit. I think in that game as well against the Jets, he made a couple of tight window throws. So Patriots fans feel a little bit better about where he is right now. But like I said, if you had asked us that question back after week 16, there was, you know, I don't want to say full-on panic, but there was some murmuring around New England. Look, this, if they get into the playoffs and need Brady to have a Brady-type game throwing the ball, we're not sure he can do it.
Were you also thinking the same way about the Texans result, by the way?
What was interesting about, you know, watching this sort of wild card weekend unfold is, you know, I said on Locked On Patriots that of the teams that are playing on wild card weekend, the one that scares me the most, I think, is the Chargers because of the way they can get pressure and stuff like that. And now they're the team that's coming up to Foxborough. I mean, I think of all those teams playing on wild card weekend, the one that I wasn't worried about, you know, was Houston. You know, you saw sort of what they were, you know, how they could struggle at times offensively and how their defense, even with Clowney and Watt, they could give up some points. And, you know, I'm not surprised that they got bounced by the Colts.
Mark, thanks for your time. We'll talk again in the offseason.
Thanks so much, guys. Have a great night and enjoy the games this weekend.
There's Mark Schofield. We will take a timeout here. Last call on the Nightcap is next. 803-0550 is the phone number. Go through some more responses to our Twitter question of the day. In terms of Antonio Brown, what would you be giving up for him if you were the Bills general manager and you were interested in him, or you're not interested in Antonio Brown? A lot of reports on him today. Not even reports. I mean, the owner just came out and said, I don't see him here in training camp. So that bomb dropped, and he probably ends up on another team. He actually tweeted today a picture of him shaking hands with the owner and something about good business. I don't even remember. But that relationship looks like it's going to end between the Steelers and Antonio Brown. We'll wrap things up after this on the Nightcap. Jody Biasi and Kyle Powell here on WGR.
I've sort of seen some of it, I think, through family and friends for the most part. They sort of keep me up to date on all those things. But yeah, it's been cool, I think. For me, coming to Buffalo, it's been sort of a new experience, and obviously a new fan base and new teammates and new organization, and everyone sort of made me feel real comfortable from the beginning, and it's continued, and yeah, it's a good feeling.
Sabres forward Jeff Skinner. I can't believe he's even in the last man vote. I mean, come on. Dude, second in the league in goals. First in even strength goals. But alas, we do the song and dance, and you got a couple hours still to vote Jeff Skinner into the All-Star game if you want. NHL.com, the last man vote. You can do that. Ends at 11. Try to get Jeff Skinner to the All-Star game to join his teammate Jack Eichel. The last couple All-Stars for the Sabres have been... I think they've had three different All-Stars in the last 3 years.
Jack Eichel last year. He's a repeat offender.
I want to say...
Zemgus Girgensons made an All-Star
okay.
game.
Okay. I should have looked this up earlier.
I do remember that.
I think they've had a different All-Star like 5 years in a row. Here we go. All-Star game
selection. Kyle Okposo?
He went recently. Eichel's went... Well, okay, Eichel went back. This will be back-to-back for Eichel. 2017 was Okposo. 2016 was O'Reilly.
Ah.
2015 was Girgensons. Nobody between 2013 and 2014. Before that, Pominville. 2011, none. Oh, there was no All-Star game in 2013 or 14. Because that would have been the Olympic. Wait, why wasn't there All-Star games those years?
Well, 12 and 13 was shortened.
Okay. And then was it Olympics after that? 2014? Yeah, that
would have
been Olympics.
Yeah, Sochi, right?
Okay, right. Okay. So 2011, none for the Sabres. No All-Star game in 2010. 2009 was Vanek. 2008 was Campbell. 2007 was Briere, Campbell, Miller, and Lindy Ruff. So the last repeat... All-Star for the Sabres before Jack Eichel this year would have been Brian Campbell in 2007 and 2008. And 2007 would have also been the last time that two Sabres have gone to the All-Star game. When four went. Ruff as coach, Miller as the goaltender, Campbell as a defenseman, and Briere as a center. Those three were all starters, too, on that team. Because remember, they used to vote for the starters, and then they would have the extra stuff after that. When it was 5-on-5. So, let's see if Skinner can get in. He returns to Carolina tomorrow, his first game back against his former team. Quick, one last out-of-town scoreboard. I'm only going to give you the score of one game. I'll give him to all you real quick. The Devils are rallying a little bit. They were down 3-0 to Toronto. It's 3-2 at the end of two. Washington up 2-1 on Boston. That's good for the Sabres. The Islanders are still up 3-2 with a period to go on the Rangers. That's bad for the Sabres, but everything else has been good so far. Except for Columbus, also up 1-0 still in Nashville. St. Louis is now up 2-0 on Montreal at the end of one. That's good. That's really good. The way the standings shake out with that right now, after tonight, the Sabres will have two games in hand on Montreal, plus they have an extra point. So by the end of the night, if St. Louis can hold that lead through the next two periods, Montreal will be a point back of Buffalo with two more games played. So that would be good. And they've played... three more games in the Islanders. I still don't think... Mike Kelly, I really respect him. I think he's one of the smartest analysts in hockey. The one thing I really disagree with him in is Montreal.
He's still high on them?
Yeah, he is. He loves their depth at forward, and I think he's basing a lot of it on Carey Price being really good, and I think that's probably where I would differ from him. Carey Price is still a really good goalie. He is not elite in the past couple years. Like, he had that one insane Vezina season. Other than that, especially recently, he's been above average, but he hasn't been carrying his team like he gets paid to do. He's paid to carry them. $10 million, right? Is his contract? It's enormous. Yeah. And he's been okay this year, but to me, I don't think they have the high-end talent at forward, and they don't have the talent on the blue line past Shea Weber, to me, where they can be a playoff team without Carey Price picking up the pace. Quickly, before we get out of here, because I know we're running short on time, if you do look at Carey Price's career numbers, like, there are a few years where he is incredible, like best goalie by far. But then there's years where not so much. This year he's at a 909. It's below average. Last year he was at a 900. That's bad. And then above average at 923. Super good at 934 and 933. This is a save percentage. 927, really good. So right there, like, that's the four-year stretch where he was super good. And then there's another 905 season in there. There's a 916 in there. There's a 912, a 905. And his career save percentage is 918, which, if you look at the course of his career, that's only slightly above average. So, to me, unless he figures out a way to be as good as he was 3-4 years ago, I don't think Montreal is better than the Sabres. I still don't. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I will be back next week as we've got Sabres and Hurricanes tomorrow night. You can check out the whole show on demand at WGR550.com or on the radio.com app. It's the Nightcap, Jody Biasi, and Kyle Powell here on WGR.